Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hello there. Welcome to the show that's brought to you with Levi Solicitors. 10% off your legal fees at levisolicitors.co.uk. I'm Dan Moylan. Hello. With me is Michael Normanton.
Hello.
And Moscow White, Daniel Chapman.
Hello.
Our summer special is out now on pre-order. Sell it to me, Moscow. 228 pages of glorious Leeds United content. We've been missing it. I know the Euros are on and everyone's getting caught up in that whirlwind. This is more important.
Everyone's been saying that Jack Grealish's hair is the most aesthetic thing to be happening this summer. That's a lie.
Fools. It's his calves.
Fools.
It's those tiny little chip forks that he uses for shin pads. No, it's the Square Ball Summer Special, full of beautiful pictures to look at and wonderful articles to read. I don't know what more people want for £8, really.
It is exceptionally good value. Yeah, lots of pages, lots of great illustrations, lots of great writing as well.
Two covers. What happens? Yeah, it's random now. You've missed the opportunity to choose. But what always happens, and we know this from experience, we sell these on pre-order and then the printed thing happens and then people see it and everybody wants one. So get one now and then you save yourself that little burn of FOMO when you see all your mates have got it and see how good it is.
You can get a £2 discount on it as well. So you can get it for £6 plus your postage if you are a TSB Plus subscriber. So you will find the summer special on our website and details of TSB Plus at thesquareball.net/plus. So this is the Euro Ball, our diary through the summer. And quite a lot's happened since we did the last Euro Ball. We've been relatively slack across the last week. But goodness me, the tournament has kicked into life because England beat Germany at Wembley. And let's not forget as well, I mean, I'm not saying this to rub it in, but Wales have exited as well. So Tyler's come home and we're into the knockout proper now. What, quarterfinals is it on the weekend?
And I just pulled out of my packet of stickers from Denmark, one of the Pointer Sisters. Pointe Sisto, I think it says here, but it's a Pointer Sisters joke. He will automatically be selected in their team, no doubt.
Do more 80s pop references, Moscow. That's how we will secure our future.
Tournament's got good, hasn't it? Yes. The knockout stages is what it needed to get exciting. And also really good games of football, I think, helped.
Do you know who's responsible for England's victory at Wembley?
Calvin Phillips.
Yes.
Correct.
And who else?
Dua Lipa.
No.
No, it was Dua Lipa.
Wasn't. I was going to say Marcelo Bielsa.
No, I mean, he may have had some influence, but Calvin Phillips's post-match tweets were all Dua Lipa this, Dua Lipa that.
Shall we remedy the grave error that the BBC made of not making the post-game all about Calvin Phillips? Because I was just watching it going, when are you going to talk about him? Don't just mention him briefly. And Raheem Sterling, don't forget his name, for Christ's sake. When he went in, the boys in midfield, Declan and...
And Rice.
Rice. Like you. Fucking pig. I know he's had a hard time from the press over the years of Sterling, but...
Justified now.
Yeah, exactly. Give him more stick as a result of that.
No, I was going to say Bielsa because, you know, England, we discovered in the post-match interviews, England played man-for-man all over the park. And do you know who does that?
Calvin Phillips.
Well, yeah, but Marcelo Bielsa, for Christ's sake. Marcelo Bielsa does that. That's his system. And who has Gareth Southgate probably watched more than any other manager? And I am just guessing at that when I say it.
Let's go with Bielsa.
He lives in Harrogate, so he comes to Leeds all the time. He's been watching Calvin. He's been watching what Bielsa does.
Certainly doesn't watch the Bundesliga, does he?
No, he doesn't.
Don't need to.
For Jadon Sancho.
Don't need to.
So are we crediting Bielsa with England's victory?
Yes.
I'm putting it forward as that.
More than happy. So, I mean, I was pleased for Southgate as well. I know we've flip-flopped a bit on him.
Well, we have.
I have. I'm still not sure if he's any good, but he won, and I like him.
I mean, I think he got to the kernel of it when he said because he was asked directly, you know, would you have been criticised? Don't you think you'd have been criticised for being too negative had you not got through? And it was like, well, yeah, you know, you make the decision to put that formation out and take the particular approach. And I think he's talking in very doom-like language, like you die or it kills you if it doesn't work. And he's right, but that is the nature of tournament football, isn't it? It's a high-stakes game.
These are my players and for them I die.
He's just Thomas Christiansen in a waistcoat, isn't he?
But he is a nice man, isn't he? He's a very nice man, and that makes him hard to dislike and to question too much.
Yeah, but you know what makes him easy to dislike?
If you lose.
No, all those goals he scored against Leeds, like a twat. Yeah. So those haven't been rubbed out yet. I'm not even sure winning this and the World Cup subsequently will be enough to overcome those goals in my mind.
I must say, when you look down the touchline and you see Gareth Southgate, like you say, quite statesmanlike, and then you look to the German bench and you've got that bloke licking and sniffing at his fingers.
What is he playing at?
It's so weird.
Yogi Löw. Did you see him? He was caught doing it again last night, wasn't he? Having a little rummage around in his nose and just having a little taste afterwards.
Licking his thumbs. Why? Why would you do this? You know cameras are on you as well.
It's a sign of a pervert, isn't
it? He likes to be seen doing it, which makes it even creepier. It's not even like a little secret. He gets off on both the sniffing and the licking and knowing people are watching him sniffing and licking.
Now we're talking about German managers. My mind has made the logical leap to Daniel Farke.
Oh, don't bring Farke into this. He's a solid character. He's not a pervert.
I just wonder what he thought of the victory last night.
Yeah. Although he is friends with Thomas Tuchel, isn't he? Who we have previously said has a cupboard full of children's shoes.
No, we didn't say that. One of our listeners said that. Suggested he looks like it, not that he does, because that would be, you know, questionable.
Well, unless he's just got a lot of shoes for his children, which is, he's a well-paid man, probably does.
Yeah, that is true. He has got kids, doesn't he? So, yeah, fair point. Moving swiftly on, I've got a Ukrainian. I've got Yevgen Makarenko, who will be facing England at the weekend.
Hey, Makarenko.
Yeah, and speaking of old pop references, I've got one half of René and Renato. I've got Renato Stefan from Switzerland. Catano's nice. Mate, there you go.
I've got David De Gea is going in the album.
I've got Ricardo Rodriguez, who is for some reason Swiss. I've got...
By the way, if you're tuning into this, you don't know what we're doing. We're opening Euro 2020 stickers throughout our adventure through the summer.
Kamil Joswiak, who is Polish. I then have Roland Szalai from Hungary. Marlos from Ukraine, who looks suspiciously Brazilian, I'm going to say with a name like Marlos. And then Damjan Šiškovski from Gianni's mate from North Macedonia.
I've got one of Gianni's mates, actually. Visar, and it looks a bit like Muesliu.
We already had Macarena, by the way.
Have we got Szalai as well?
From which country?
Hungary. I feel like I've seen him before.
What's his number?
I've got a vertical half and half of Szalai.
What's the number on the back? Szalai.
Oh, I can't even pronounce it.
644.
644, right at the back of the book.
And I've got an Italian, Niccolo Barella. He's there for you, Moscow. Okay. Throwing a bunch over the table.
We do not have Roland the Rat Szalai, so happily stick him in.
Just stick him in however you want, upside down, wonky.
So Michael, you hypocritical bastard then.
Hmm?
Gareth Southgate.
Good lad, isn't he?
Proving his doubters wrong.
Harry Kane too, I was saying all game. What a good match he was having.
God, he looks tired.
He would surely score.
Yeah, I mean, he has always got a goal in him, hasn't he? But he looks absolutely shot.
I mean, he did score, anyone in that position would have scored it. But I mean, you'd have to maybe give him credit for being in that position in the first place.
I'm not even sure he knew he was there. He looks like he doesn't know where he is half the time. I'm wondering, if you didn't know better, you'd think he'd been drugged. Like somebody's...
Like a racehorse.
Yeah, that somebody's doped him and he, you know, spiked his pre-match pasta or something. And because he's got that look about him where he just doesn't seem to know where he is or what he's doing. And yet, you know, I suppose that he can still stick a ball in the back of the net despite that, is to his credit. But worry about him for the rest of the... Maybe that's the goal that will spark him back into life. Who knows?
He was playing badly enough that when he went down injured, I thought, oh, good. He might go off now.
Yes, Sterling through the middle and bring on Sancho or one of these other exciting players to take his place out wide. And then suddenly we might have a dynamic front three ahead of the defensive eight.
Has Sancho had any minutes yet?
Yeah, he came on, didn't he, for a bit.
Because Calvin's had all the minutes, hasn't he? That's important to point out. He's the only outfield player for England who's played in every minute of the tournament so far.
Very greedy, isn't he? And you can see why, because him and Rice, they do similar jobs to Calvin is further forward. But Rice looks knackered by the end of games, whereas Calvin looks like he could do another 90 minutes, doesn't he, at the end of it?
He's set and forget, isn't he? I think it feels to me like Southgate knows that he can put Calvin in that system and he's going to do a good job for him regardless.
Calvin must be the first name on the team sheet after Pickford, because even with, I know Harry Kane is the, Renato Stefan is a double as well. Even Kane is the, you know, the talisman and the captain and the god of everything. But the way he's been playing, it must have crossed Southgate's mind to just like let him go and sleep it off. And then the rest of them, it's kind of, there's all the questions. Do you do Grealish or Saka? And do you do, you know, is Sancho going to play instead of so-and-so? Is Henderson going to come back in? Who's going to, he going to be a back three? But right in the middle of it all, Calvin Phillips, 90 minutes, no problem.
Because he's brilliant. Were you worried about his yellow card at all?
Massively so. I was worried about it probably most in the kind of minute afterwards when I was thinking in the Premier League, VAR are definitely watching this enough that they talk themselves into making this a red card because they'd slow it down. In real time, it did look like a yellow card. It was one of those where you can tell he's...
They're both going for the ball.
He's gone over the top. Yeah, I don't think he's malicious, but he did go over the top, but slowed down and watched from enough angles, you can very easily talk yourself into that being a red.
How do you think it compares to the Sweden one that happened later on, which was given as a red, which I thought was incredibly harsh? And I know he's not dissimilar to what Liam Cooper did, but Liam Cooper actually at Man City went in with more intent, didn't he? He got the ball and took the man afterwards, whereas this guy was just genuinely going for the ball, got the ball, and then the guy crashed into his foot.
It was a bit more leg bendy, wasn't it, though?
The
second one. It was one of those where you think it was probably a very marginal difference between that guy's leg being all over the pitch.
But it is a contact sport.
It is.
And injury is part of the risk, the inherent risk of football, and I don't think you can completely manage that out of it.
What if anyone had done that too, Calvin?
Well, of course, then I'd want them prosecuted and jailed like those Liverpool fans when they went mad about Pickford and Virgil van Dijk.
It was all down to the Ukrainian fella running into him, though. If he'd stood off and blocked the clearance from a distance of 2 or 3 feet, then his knee would be absolutely fine and Danielson would carry on playing the game. But because he went in charging in full pelt when he'd finished his clearance, there was nowhere else for his foot to go apart from straight into his now wounded knee. So it was a bit unfair from that point of view. It's all down to, you know, was he out of control? And I don't know if he was.
It just goes to show the fine margins though, doesn't it? Because if it had been a red card, probably I wouldn't have been that surprised. And then we're talking about Calvin Phillips being the national disgrace today because he's been sent off and England have gone out and it's his fault. Yeah. And just as well, the similar margins of Raheem Sterling when he puts them through on goal. And it's dragged wide. He's the hero now because he scored the opening goal and the goal that was enough to win it. But if that goes the other way,
it's all about his gun tattoos, isn't it?
And then Germany win it. Exactly. We get that on the front page instead of Harry Kane, which is what everyone has gone for as a front page.
The Sun have gone for Raheem Sterling. That's the same Raheem Sterling that they called him a disgrace on more than one occasion for having particular tattoos.
And for having some money.
Yeah.
Was the other thing he was mainly criticised for by them and just going about his life in a way that they disagree with.
Are you constantly kind of redefining? This is, again, it's a window into, if you're not an England fan, you're not English, it's a window into how we perceive England as English men. We're having to come to terms with liking footballers that we shouldn't like for clubs that we don't like. I mean, obviously...
The United boys.
Luke Shaw and the United boys is fine for Moscow, but... Like Jack Grealish and stuff, he's evidently he is a game changer, isn't he? And I'm finding it very difficult to hate him when I've got no reason to.
It's weird with Grealish though, because everyone seems to love him, like beyond a reasonable degree at the moment. He's like the new Princess Diana or something. Everyone's absolutely hangs on his every word. You see a glimpse of him on a screen and...
You wait till he's tumbling round in that bloody Aston Villa kit in about another couple of months' time and you'll be berating him.
And the crowd are all screaming like it's... teenage girls seeing Take That emerge from a tour bus or something. It's bizarre. I mean, he's good.
BTS for the kids, you know, we'll go for a younger reference as well.
I don't know what that means, but okay, good. Yes, them. Those great bunch of lads. Is it weird? I don't know. It feels odd that everyone's... I think the fact he's been limited in terms of how much we're getting of him, I think that's making him... The scarcity of him is raising his stock all the more.
Yeah. I did quite enjoy his post-match interview. Was kind of a reminder of why
he's thick, isn't he?
I don't really like him.
He's thick.
Well, it wasn't so much that, but it was... In fact, no, I'm confusing him with Harry Maguire. Oh, was it him? No, I think it was Grealish, because I'm sure Grealish... And, maybe I shouldn't even go down this road if I can't remember what happened. I'm sure Grealish's post-match, he was asked, you know, you came on, you made a goal, you made an assist, and that must be great for you. He said, well, yeah, it's not about me, though. It's about the team performance, but obviously... Setting up that goal was really good by me, and also the assist that I got was really good that I did. And I just thought I wanted to come on and make a difference like I did. But it's not about me, but it is kind of about me.
Look at me. I'm not a massive narcissist. However, I am very, very important.
It's all about the team, but look at all the good stuff I did while you talk about the team.
Is that just honesty, though? Because I feel like sometimes players will have scored a hat-trick and they've dragged the team out. They've won 3-2 and they're the only player who's done anything. And they go, it's not about me, though, is it? It's about a team performance. All the lads have done a great job. And you're thinking,
platitudes.
They haven't. It's you. Just accept it.
It goes into what we were saying about Rafinha, though, over on the extra ball when we were speaking with KG and how Rafinha approaches games. He's like, he's a maniac, is Rafinha, and he knows his own quality. And I guess to be great, you kind of have to have that inherent self-belief, which Grealish evidently does to a disproportionate amount. But it's quite a dislikable character trait when somebody comes out. And it's not very, and I use the phrase in inverted commas, but it's quite un-English, if you know what I mean. Like, it's not within our national characteristics to go, I'm dead good, because generally if you do that, other people will shoot you down. Because that is in the national character.
I've quite enjoyed the contrast when it comes to national character between people saying, on the one hand, oh, didn't Jurgen Klinsmann take defeat well? Wasn't he very magnanimous on the BBC? Very, very noble, while we're also in the next shot laughing in the face of a crying child. It's noble. That German fellow's been very noble in defeat. Well, are we going to be gracious in victory then? Fuck no.
But the point that, and then this, I mean, I tweeted that out last night from the Square Ball account, and I ended up deleting it just because enough people had enough of a moan about it to go, I can't be arsed. It's only Twitter. It's not worth it. It's still funny.
She was funny. I mean, it was.
Because we've all been that child. That's the point. We've all been there. We've all experienced the pain of defeat as Leeds fans. We know more than anything else what it's like to hurt as a kid when you're following your football team.
I think the risk to then was becoming a meme, a little bit like the Swiss guy with his shirt on, shirt off, but like he's, you know, old enough to take it. You don't really want six-year-olds becoming the subject of humour on the internet so much. But the actual tears, absolute fair game to laugh at those, because, you know, it's not like she was grieving for like a dead rabbit or something. It's like a pet had died.
Well, she might have been.
Well, yeah, I mean, everybody assumed it was the football was the problem. Maybe she just got a text message from the vet or something.
The lad who was at Bolton seems to have fared all right, doesn't
he? Well, exactly. And it's, you know, I think it's one of those things that happens in tournaments like this, is you get a lot of people who don't normally follow football. They see something like that and they think, oh, that's an absolute disgrace. And then it's difficult to kind of explain to them to the other side of that. Say, well, no, we laugh in the faces of crying children all the time. There's nothing special about her.
This is what the sport is all about.
I mean, I on the Griefcast, called one of our own supporters a miserable bitch or something, didn't I?
Yes, and it's fairly normal. It's kind of, it's in the moment, nothing wrong with laughing at. But yeah, I was amused by the whole
the contrast of it.
Good on Jurgen Klinsmann for taking defeat so well.
Do you want some exciting sticker news?
Oh, I can beat your exciting sticker news.
Go on.
No, you go first. I don't want to.
Is it a Leeds player?
No, just you do it first.
I've got Robin Koch.
Oh, that's exciting. Is that the first Leeds player?
I think it is. Well, Calvin Phillips isn't in it, is he?
No, Grealish is.
I think we should make a Calvin Phillips sticker and put him in.
You can, actually. There is a thing where you can go on the website. This is like an advert for Panini. Other sticker manufacturers are available but don't have the license. You can go to mypanini.com and create a personalised sticker.
Shall we get stickers of us three and Calvin Phillips?
I mean, just Calvin Phillips would be possibly the less egotistical way of doing it, but
if we can get Calvin's mum as well.
Yeah.
She was there last night, wasn't she? It was nice to see her peering out from behind a flag, wasn't it?
And Granny Val was there in spirit because he had her name on his boots, didn't he? Which again, just because he's such a lovely lad, you just go, oh, Calvin.
The whole thing yesterday, his performance, the boots, his mum being in the crowd.
Thanking Dua Lipa.
It all made me think we should just give him all the money that the club has and make him stay forever. Mm. Whatever he wants, whatever that family wants. Just let him have it. It's fine. I'm aware it'll drive us to the brink of bankruptcy again, but if he wants £500,000 a week, just let him have it.
If we could manufacture a situation where Kiko Casilla, let's say, disappeared,
mm-hmm.
put in the insurance claim.
Have you been speaking to Morris?
Save what? I'm going to assume he's on somewhere close to 40 or 50 grand a week now. Save that money. Give it to Calvin. See, should we put that forward? I don't know if they've thought of that. We should put it forward. I've got more exciting sticker news. I think this might excite Moscow more than the Robin Koch one. Two players. It's one of those vertical ones. Two England players.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Harry Maguire.
See where this is going. Yeah. Oh, my favourite.
Who's one of your big United favourites. And Kieran Trippier, soon to be one of your big United favourites. There you go. Look at that.
We were speaking about warming to players that we didn't previously pay much mind to. Jordan Pickford. I've really come round to the idea of Jordan Pickford, partly because I think he looks a lot better now he's grown his hair out. And secondly, and this fits into your little game, when we've talked on the Matchball 30 about my sort of young admiration for Les Sealy, because he absolutely hated every Man United player that he played behind, was constantly just berating them for every tiny little mistake. Jordan Pickford's bringing that to the England team. And it's an interesting contrast when you see Harry Kane stumbling around like an ill horse at one end of the pitch, wearing the captain's armband. And then at the other, there's Pickford
<Ill horse.
laughs> just not letting anybody away with anything. It was that I would have liked to see more. Everybody moved the camera off when Muller didn't put it in the corner. Hey, and you saw the replay of Raheem Sterling falling to his knees in gratitude. What was then missed from the footage, you could see it starting, was Pickford running about 50 yards to get right in Raheem Sterling's face and say, "What the fuck do you think you're doing?"
See,
playing
passes
like that.
I don't think Raheem Sterling needs telling that was a bad thing to do. I think he's probably realised. Well, I didn't mean to do that, did I, Jordan?
He actually laughed about it, didn't he, in the wake of it, kind of a, "Ooh, I got away with that one."
But it's good. I like it about Pickford, and you can see it in some other teams. I've just got Gaetano Berardi's brother, by the way, Domenico.
I want to just say this before the thought escapes me. Do you know what it's like? It's like when you're in the car. And you make, I mean, obviously I don't do this, but I've heard somebody might do. You make a little mistake driving that could have potentially caused an accident. Like you might have nearly rear-ended somebody or pulled out on somebody, but you realise just in time and you have that whoo rush of adrenaline and you're like, "I'm sorry, mate. Yeah, yeah, hold your hands up. Yeah, I'm sorry. I realise my culpability here. Sorry, yeah, you got me. It was like that for Sterling, I think.
Yeah. But I've quite enjoyed Pickford's intensity. He's reminded me a little bit of like early Pontus Janssen at Leeds when he used to celebrate defensive stuff. When there was a bit where he definitely just collected a ball low down yesterday. And he started screaming with the ball in his arms. And I thought, good,
fair enough.
There was another moment as well when I think it might have been Kyle Walker was sort of shepherding the ball out for a goal kick. And it looked as if he was about to touch the ball. And it just happened on the edge of the camera, so I'm not entirely sure I'm right. But I think Pickford kind of grabbed him and dragged him backwards and put him on the floor to make sure he didn't touch this ball as it went out of play. And it's what sometimes is missing international football in general. I mean, if you look around it, the way France kind of capitulated and Germany just look leaderless, is somebody bringing that kind of intensity to the national team and having a good angry face goalkeeper at the back. And he somehow doesn't normally work this way, but since he's grown his hair out a bit longer, it somehow makes him look even angrier and madder than when he was shaving his head. So he's the main character, as far as I'm concerned. And when it comes to Inge Lund, if you want any proof that it's coming home, just got the shiny Inge Lund badge.
Oh, it's fate. It's serendipity, isn't it?
In my Robin Koch pack, by the way, I've also got another one of your Brave United lads, Donny van der Beek. There you go. You can stick him in.
Hey, I've got a couple of Croats here who I'm going to attempt to mangle their names. Andrej Kramaric and Milan. That's got letters in an order that I don't understand. B-A-D-E-L-J, him. Also got, look at how happy Jan Bednarak is. He's Polish. He's Clicky's mate. Look at that. Look how happy he is just to be getting photographed there. He's delighted, isn't he? There you go. And finally, a couple of Turkish lads. We've got a bloke called Under. But the one on the left, it's one of those vertical stickers where you get two in one. It's that Ozan Tufan, you know, the guy that we were linked to, that central midfielder. And everyone's basically saying, he's fat. I mean, what do you think of that? Look at his physique there.
He had two fans and he's eaten them both.
Do you think he's a bit... Is there a visible belly there or is it just the way the shirt's falling?
I think he looks fine.
And he looks better than I do.
I've got a fairly unremarkable pack. A nice group shot of the Czechs. Joshua Kimmich, a German loser, and Ben Davies, a Welsh loser.
Oh, so we should address that, by the way, because they got absolutely tanked, didn't they? And Tyler got a quarter of an hour.
Brilliant. Thanks for coming. What a waste of his time.
He did actually inject some joy and positivity and like a little bit of hope into that game.
In the period he was on the pitch, didn't they concede two goals?
Yeah, but they weren't his fault. And
didn't think they would be.
It was like watching him at Leeds in reverse, because you know one of the frustrations with him at Leeds. He's a bit slow to release the ball when somebody makes a run. He was the one making all the runs and not getting the ball. And then
there was a lot of pointing and frustration going on.
Yeah. And then when the first time, when he did get the ball and kind of played it wide, there was no real point because he was only giving it to fucking Gareth Bale and he's absolute crap.
You can see why Spurs fell off towards the end of the season when you've got Harry Kane chugging around, like you say, like a lame horse, and Gareth Bale, who's just thinking about the back nine.
And Gareth Bale was quite amusing post-game as well. He was such a stroppy child. Well, he was stroppy during the game, wasn't he? Then when he was asked at the end if it was his last game for Wales, and he just left.
Yeah. I know Gareth Bale is basically like the biggest hero they've had since Mickey Thomas, but he's not all that anymore. And
it feels like he's getting close to his Las Vegas residency period now.
Yeah, there was two moments in particular that stood out in that game. One where he took some interest, and it was like a 1 minute bout of, oh yeah, I'm the best player here, so I better do something. And he ran over into midfield to take the ball off somebody's toe and then pass it back to the person who just passed it to them. And then he ran into the box and it was crossed in, and he got in Kiefer Moore's way for what was actually quite a good chance. And then he just went and stood on the wing and moaned again for the rest of it. The other thing that struck me about him was he was taking their long throws. And I think Wales have some good players. Tyler Roberts, Gaz Bale, as they keep calling him, who's the Juventus fella, Aaron Ramsey, even Dan James, David Brooks, Harry Wilson, who came on and did the most petulant "we're going out of this tournament" thing I've seen since Alan Smith versus Valencia. Some decent players there. But if you've got to the point where Gareth Bale is taking long throws onto Kiefer Moore's head, you maybe need to get your actual manager out of his fucking court cases that he's more busy with, or find somebody you can actually spare the time in between his fucking allegations to actually manage the team instead of just leaving it to his mate. And then they might have a chance of going a bit further. I felt bad because you had Brynlow, sweet chariot on the extra ball. And
Brynlow?
Yes.
Brynlow?
Yeah. But that doesn't work with the sweet chariot joke, yeah, if I call him by his real name.
Right. Close enough, yeah.
So
fine.
You wanted Wales to do well for him. Also lots of Welsh people who are nice, but not to be. And I'm also sure, for Tyler Roberts.
They can get behind England now, it's fine, isn't it? And I know that's exactly
how it works.
Prior to the England game, we had that mad shit going on with Spain and Croatia. What was it, 5-3? Llorente still not had any game time, which I'm fine with in a way, because I want him to stay as untired as possible for next season.
It's a shame he's not getting some game time, because their defence basically looks quite shit. So he should be in it, is what I'm saying. But maybe he doesn't need it.
Quite funny seeing the French exit and the subsequent fallout for that. Have you seen the tweets that are doing the rounds? Follow it was 3-3, wasn't it, against Switzerland, and then the penalty defeat, Mbappe and all that. That it was, I think it was Mbappe's family and Pogba's family, and then a third family who's a
robot.
Yeah, that was it.
It's robot's mother was causing all the problems.
They were having like a three-way ding-dong, weren't they, in the stands. Somebody called out Pogba's family saying basically he's arrogant and blah, 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 blah. So.
Which one of his 12 goal celebrations did you think was arrogant? I mean, he was very good in that game and he scored an absolutely brilliant goal.
He's a brilliant footballer, isn't he?
It's hard to get away from the fact
that
he's kind of an annoying prick in the same way as Grealish is.
Yeah.
He's very much about himself, isn't he? But then he's also dead good. So maybe he's allowed to do that.
Yeah, the celebrations were fine. It's not just Pogba, it's the entire French team. That's what they love.
Mm.
They love being 3-1 up, scoring incredible goals, hitting the wall so it'll go on TikTok. And it's when the game starts at 0-0 and they have to do something about getting into the lead so that they can do all this stuff. That's where it's like, oh, fucking come on. And I think Didier Deschamps, instead of setting them up, saying like, right, we're going to be three at the back and you're going to be wing backs and you need to track this runner and do all that, just say to them, right, the first person and the fourth person to score right into the top corner, you each get a bottle of Grey Goose. And gamify it. They need, that actually probably, like, they don't all drink, do they? So cash equivalent.
It's, you get some vouchers.
You get £30 each. Imagine that, Paul Pogba, £30 in your pocket.
But I'll give you an Amazon gift voucher so you can get what you want.
But they need, I mean, it became, the second half performance was about kind of regaining their self-respect after an absolutely shocking first half. So they had to go and start doing, and Benzema's touch to put himself through for that goal is extraordinarily brilliant, and it's a shame that the French players aren't going to be around in the rest of the tournament to do that kind of stuff. But they only seem to like being 3-0 up, doing all the tricks, you know, just enjoying what they're doing, and the actual having to try and win the match stuff just seems to kind of doesn't seem to register. So it's not going to work. But yeah, all the arguments. It's Rabiot's mum is also his agent, and apparently she was having a go at.
That's just made me think of Lasaga's mum. Sorry.
Yeah. She was having a go at Pogba's family because of him giving the ball away for the equaliser in stoppage time, which was, you know, I was pleased when Graeme Souness was back on the television the next day that he'd survived that. And then when Mbappe missed the penalty, apparently she was off into his family.
Great. She sounds like a real treat.
She has previously had a go at the Paris Saint-Germain ownership for the way that they treated Little Robot when he was there.
On the Guardian podcast, they had Philippe Auclair on, and he didn't explain what exactly he was annoyed at with Rabiot, but he just kept saying, Rabiot is Rabiot. He just kept saying it as if we should know what it means.
That should make sense. Oh, by the way, just it is a reference we have touched on before.
The French Matt Grimes, I think that's just to finish that up.
Well, another mother reference there. Yeah, if you don't know what we're talking about with Lasaga's mother, we have referenced this before on the podcast. Just go to Google and type in Pierre-Michel Lasaga, mom or mother, and you will find a visual treat on the image results. It's Oedipus, is that the right word I'm after?
Well, let's just say they're close.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
On to the quarterfinals then at the weekend. Switzerland, Spain, Belgium, Italy. That's a ding-dong one, isn't it? Czech Republic, Denmark, and England, Ukraine.
We should really get to the final, shouldn't we? Group of death?
Yeah, they're all out, aren't they? Ronaldo's sad face. We haven't even touched on that yet. That was great.
Always a joy.
He's another one. He's very much on the downslope now, isn't he? Like Gareth Bale, he's nothing like the player he used to be. In this the game, he seems to be reduced to doing completely unnecessary stuff to draw attention to himself. Like he'd just pick it up in midfield, and rather than just pass it square, he'd for some reason just flick it, and thinking he was playing in some sort of testimonial and just fucking about, trying to still make it about himself, which he constantly has done throughout his career. But mainly he's been good enough to get away with it. Whereas now,
I think there's a free kick being lined up on Wortley Wreck and he's getting a plane over.
I did laugh at all the references that, oh, this is in Ronaldo range. He scored one in about, what is it, 90 attempts or something at those free kicks in tournaments.
And there are other people in that team who are really good at free kicks as well. But nope, it's got to be Ronaldo because he once scored one against Portsmouth in about fucking 1996. And so he's got to keep trying to do the same thing again.
Not a fan?
Well, Moscow, have you got anything nice to say about Ronaldo?
I despise him.
He's such a good player and he's such a knobhead.
I don't even care that he's good. Like, if you compare him, he's all just numbers in terms of like just goals being put in. Messi, and it's always been Messi versus Ronaldo over the last decade. Messi, you enjoy playing. Ronaldo, you're supposed to just be like pummeled by the sheer statistical
weight. He's like the T-1000, isn't he?
Yeah, there's no pleasure in watching anything Ronaldo does, whereas Messi is just, it's usually a joy to see him doing the great things he does. Plus he can score free kicks.
More stickers, by the way. I've got a couple of Belgians. We've got Thorgan Hazard and Thomas Meunier.
He scored a good goal, didn't he? Thorgan.
He did. Oh, that was a thunder bastard, wasn't it? You absolutely twatted that. There you go. A couple of Belgians for you. And we've got, who else have we got? This lad for Wales, Rabi Matondo. And we've got Kevin Mbabu for Switzerland. And then a couple of Gianni's mates as well, Stolle, Dmitrievski, and Vizar. Oh, Muesli again. We've got Muesli.
Only struggling to get the
that's the vertical half and half sticker, that one. That, so it's not a double.
Struggling to get Vojic Chesney's back off.
Speaking of Gianni, we're recording on Wednesday, and today's the final day of his contract. Do you think he even realizes that he's out of contract? Has somebody told him?
From looking at his Instagram, he's like posing with cardboard cutouts of himself.
He's got a little necklace with EA10 on it that somebody's made him, and I don't know if those have. Like going to if that's like a new retail line that we'll all be able to buy EA10 necklaces, but he needs to make sure if he's not staying at Leeds, or even if he is staying at Leeds, he needs to sign to secure his number 10 shirt, or that wherever he ends up has a free 10 if he's going to be selling this Argos jewellery.
You see, I've got a vision of that almost being like an identity tag, like, you know, like in the hospital where they make you wear a bracelet in case you go missing. It'll be engraved on the back saying, you know, return to sender type instructions. But yeah, it certainly looks like he's off. You get the feeling that if he was going to be signing, he would have signed. But it's just within Alioski's character to decide tomorrow, as we record this, I probably will do again then, because I haven't got a job now.
I mean, technically speaking, Pablo and Berardi are still in contract at the moment, so maybe they'll sign as well.
Well, Pablo does have another year left. I think that's been cancelled by mutual consent, isn't it? But Berardi does finish today. So officially, today's the official end of an era, Wazin boy.
And the start of Junior Firpo.
And did you see who Barry Douglas has been linked with as well?
Yes. There's secret talks.
Who?
Massimo's Brescia.
Oh, really?
That'd be an interesting move for him.
You see, Barry, I really like Barry Douglas. He seems to have, he likes to embrace just a very slight madness in terms of where he goes and what he does. It's got that little bit out there side to his personality, I think.
He won't be able to dress like that around Massimo Cellino. Barry, I have a headache. Get out of my eyes.
But yeah, Firpo, looks like that one's about to be done anytime soon. That's exciting, isn't it? Signing left backs from Barcelona. Hector Jr. Firpo Ademez, 24 years old, Dominican Republic, born there, moved to Spain at 6. He's got dual citizenship. Don't think we've ever had a Dominican player before, have we?
Going to say no, but I'll wait to be proved wrong. Someone will know better than us, but no, not as far as I'm aware.
But at 15 million euro, which is under 13 million quid, for a left back of that caliber, it looks like some canny business when you look at the money that the likes of Arsenal are throwing around. I mean, like Buendia, I think, is a really good at Arsenal. Sorry, Villa. Buendia, like, is a good player, but I'd question as to whether you want to be paying 40 million, up to 40 million, for him. And then Emil Smith Rowe, they're talking about 30 million, which is where I was thinking about Arsenal.
How high are they going to go on Emil Smith Rowe? It is weird.
Leeds hero. He's a Leeds hero.
Well, yeah, exactly. But I mean, is he that good?
And while you're on it, Arsenal are trying to throw 50 million quid at Ben White as well, aren't they? Which maybe wouldn't be bad business for him, actually, because they're an absolute shit show at the back. So maybe that would be money well spent.
But they'll ruin him.
There is a part of you thinks that's not a great move for him.
No, it's a terrible move to him. It's the worst place he could go.
He could just see his contract out and then come to Leeds for his peak years on a Bosman.
When you see the way he fitted into a Bielsa team, you'd think Liverpool or Manchester City would be a much better bet. I suppose Arteta is Pep light, isn't he? And if he's going to try and rebuild Arsenal in that kind of image, he could be, you know, he might be the player for them for the next 15 years or something. But who gets 15 years at Arsenal, since they tried that with Wenger and look what it got them, every major honour going. But they didn't like it, so they're never going to do that again.
As well, he's not really Pep light, is he? I mean, he's so light. He's more supermarket own brand.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no proof that he's anything like a decent manager, is there?
I do feel like Arsenal will just ruin his potential, because that's what they do. Whereas Junior Firpo will, I think he's stalled a bit at Barcelona since signing for them.
Where did he come from? Moscow. Yes, long-time listeners of the podcast will be waiting for this one eagerly.
He's being bought just to spite me. Real Betis.
Well done.
Yeah, there we go. Ooh, no more Betis. No more Real Betis.
Betis.
But
they paid a fair whack for him, though. They paid like 18 million euro plus up to 12 million add-ons, and by the sounds of it, a couple of million will go to Betis in the sell-on clause, and then Barcelona basically just about make back what they still owe on him. So it's a good deal, isn't it? Financially, it seems like a really good deal.
If he's a good player, then yeah, it'll be great.
Yeah, he looked like he was decent for Betis. I mean, we defer to YouTube for all our scouting. I mean, Michael, have you seen him on YouTube? You're the one who's kind of got the tactical and management expertise among the three of us.
I've seen him on YouTube and I think we should buy him.
Why? Talk us through it in terms of your analytic perspective.
He looks like he's good at running and left-backing.
Mm-hmm. What qualities do you need to be good at left-backing?
Running forwards, crossing the ball, and some defending too.
Uh-huh.
Is he left-footed?
There is strength. Yes.
He looks quite big, actually. Like, Luke Ayling's quite tall for a fullback, isn't he?
Yeah, he's about 6 foot, I think.
Yeah, and Junior Firpo seems to have a bit of verticality about him. So it might be nice to have him bombing in at the far post, crashing in headers. He'll score, what we're going to say, 10 goals for Ayling, 10 goals for Firpo next season, amongst others.
This might be Gianni's thinking, is that he needed to see who was going to be coming in and whether they're any good before he decides whether he's staying or not. And, it could go either way because it feels getting an ex-Everton player feels a bit, was it Bojan who ended up at Stoke? Like Stoke were always getting sort of Barcelona rejects and Everton or quite often they'll take her. Who was that one? He scored the absolutely incredible goal in
James Rodriguez.
A tournament. No, he ended up at Watford, but he was going around for ages.
Richarlison.
No. You know who I mean. That guy. Anyway, him. So there's loads of players like him kind of Ashley Young. Knock around out of... No, he was like a really tall winger and he was at Everton and I think his name begins with an F. I'll go and Google it and you can talk amongst yourselves for a while.
Hey, worth pointing out that Rodrigo de Paul still hasn't moved anywhere.
Still waiting by the phone, isn't he? Yeah. Like his contract, a bit like Alioski's, he's there ready to sign, but he's putting it off.
Gerard Deulofeu.
Ah, yes.
Him.
Yeah, starts with an F, yeah.
So, yeah, two games for Barcelona and then a loan to Everton, loan to Sevilla, permanent to Everton, Milan, back to Barcelona for a bit, then loan to Watford, permanent Watford. They give him to Udinese because it's basically the same club and all blah, blah, blah. Four games for Spain, then he switches allegiance to Catalonia at one point.
Can you do that?
I don't know if he switched allegiance, but certainly he's got a cap for them.
They're not even recognised as a team, are they?
No.
It's probably how he could do it.
Non-FIFA sanctioned friendly, I think that one, yeah.
So that kind of feel about it where you can never quite tell what you get. I mean, we signed the last left back we signed from one of the El Clasico clubs.
Barry Douglas again.
I was going to say Raul Bravo. But
I was going to say that Villa Wolves derby. He was interesting, Raul Bravo. He's gone on to have a very interesting future after Leeds, hasn't he?
Hmm.
Again, worth Googling.
Yeah, I don't know what's ever become of all the match-fixing guns. So Saiz was...
He was implicated, wasn't he? I think he was fingered. Well. Is that not what the phrase is? Fingered?
And Samu...
Is that one of his other crimes?
Samu's had a tough summer. For the second successive season, his team, Girona, I think he's out, have lost in the Segunda playoffs. And they had a lead from the first leg against whoever it was that beat them and lost in the second leg because... Samuel only started on the bench for the second leg, which I think must have been the single and only problem in that match. But yeah, he's coming so close to playing in the top league in Spain and you just can't get there.
The interesting angle on Firpo that I like is that AC Milan were in for him, but there wasn't a willingness to do that deal because it sounded like it was a loan deal. But I really like the idea of us gazumping AC Milan for football players.
It is nice, isn't it? Rather than just trying to sign...
Portsmouth landfill.
Rather than trying and failing to sign Hooper every single year.
You see, when you're bringing all the wrong keywords when you're talking about Milan, Portsmouth, Leeds, it's just Rocky Jr. is what you're bringing to mind. You're like you're summoning him up.
Who's your favourite junior then so far that's been related to Leeds? Rocky Jr., Junior Lewis, Junior Firpo?
I mean, out of the three, it's Junior Firpo hasn't done anything wrong yet, so...
He's in credit.
He's got the advantage over the other two. I'm just sticking in the England shiny, by the way.
It's been...
Do you want to sing Sweet Caroline while I do it?
No. It's been funny watching Nahitan Nandez, that one, unfold, and Mateus Cunha, because both seem to be doing... There's a lot of agent noise. There's a lot of agent noise going on, and Cunha in particular, he's gone a bit Rodrigo de Paul. What's he doing? Batting his eyelashes at Leeds United. I mean, if you've not seen it, he's been doing stuff on, I think it's Instagram, isn't it, where he's answering questions like, what do you think of England? Love it and all that. And he's putting blue and yellow hearts and all that kind of crazy shit. Would you like them, both of them?
Yep, sign both of them.
And the Nandez thing, it was interesting seeing that rumour, it was a wild rumour maybe, of a 15 million euro season-long loan with an obligation to buy at the end of the first season for a further 15 million.
Ask anyone and they'll know that Leeds United will are true to their word on things like this. You can rely on us for that extra 15 million, even if he has a poor season.
But I am interested to know what, if that were true, what is the benefit of doing that? I can only think it would be to sign somebody and not have to pay them full Premier League wages. So you basically adopt their wages for a year of their contract. And then in 12 months' time, you chuck a shitload of money at them.
It'll be some spreading of money around, won't it? So you get slightly more overall as the selling club, I would assume. But
kind of what we did with Helder Costa, wasn't it? Where his first season was technically a loan, and then we started just paying the instalments on him.
We did get Amari Miller from Birmingham. I did enjoy the announcement of that, and all the Birmingham fans, yeah, you're greedy, he's gone for the money, which is the typical football fan reaction. Of course, we've been guilty of the same thing in the past. But is it nothing to do with coming to a Premier League club that's got a really clear pathway to the first team for the under-23s and the chance to be coached by Marcelo Bielsa?
Still legacy of Gary Monk, I think, because didn't he completely ruin Birmingham's under-23s? He just wasn't interested in having them. I think he went an entire season there without playing a single player from the under-23s. He was unique in the championship for doing that. And there was whole stuff with his agent allegedly trying to get players signed up and all that kind of stuff. And certainly the feeling was that it wasn't a happy place, the Birmingham City Academy. And it's getting better now. Lee Bowyer is in charge there, and they had a cuddly old, what's-his-face, Monk's mate-turned-nemesis.
Pep Clatet
will have made things a bit nicer down there. But they were happy enough when Jude Bellingham left. They even retired his shirt, so I don't see why this should be such a big deal.
Birmingham might retire the number. I think he's 41, is he?
He's older than Bellingham, this lad, isn't he? He's pathetic. Not even in the England squad. Why are we signing these bums?
That is mental, actually, that yesterday, 29th of June, was Jude Bellingham's 18th birthday. That is frightening, isn't it, as a concept of being that good when you're 18.
Whose child came on for France?
Thuram's.
Yes, Lilian Thuram's son.
No.
Wandering around the pitch for France.
Presumably he's a toddler or something like that. Is he can't be old enough to be playing international football.
And yeah, no, I felt very old when that happened as well.
That's terrifying. Have we got any grandchildren? Any grandchildren turned out yet in any of these tournaments from footballers of our lifetime? Because footballers do tend to have kids early because managers encourage them to settle down, don't they? And get into relationships. So they'll get married at 21 and that. You've seen Pascal Struyck on bended knee.
Yeah, I mean, Lilian Thuram himself, his full name is Ruddy Lilian Thuram William. He's 49. So he must have had his son at a reasonably young age.
Lilian Thuram was always a brilliant championship manager signing back in the day.
He was play right back and centre back.
Yeah, he was absolutely outstanding. Should we sign Lilian Thuram's child?
And Lilian Thuram. He could still do a job, I think. Get up and down that wing. Not a problem.
Back up for Luke Ayling.
Marcus Lilian Thuram William is 23. He's not even young.
Do you want an exclusive Leeds United story?
Please.
That I am breaking.
Go on,
today. I was driving here, as you know, we're now recording just around the corner from Elland Road, as I pulled off the motorway up at Holbeck.
I see. I know what's coming here. He doesn't, does he?
Moscow doesn't know this yet. I saw a man in business dress riding a BMX.
So just picture that. There are new bike lanes, by the way, that run from town along Elland Road itself.
Presumably taking advantage of them, but I thought...
Yeah, right past Elland Road.
It looked too small for him, this bike. And do you know who was on that bike? Angus Kinnear.
Angus Kinnear on a bike?
Riding a BMX to work.
Maybe he's been off at the ramp before work, just getting in some, I don't know, 180s. Is that a thing?
Probably. He didn't have the stump pegs on, but he was... I assume he was probably going to spin his way down.
Well, your stump pegs you'd catch your suit trouser leg on a stump peg, wouldn't you?
Maybe this is how we're attracting the young players. Angus Kinnear's turning up on a BMX.
Well, I mean...
With a baseball cap on backwards.
As you saw from the end of season awards, those hipster lads from TikTok, whatever they were, Roger Zani's mates.
Yeah, F2.
Them, yeah, so the keyboard people.
Yes,
yeah.
Brightness setting.
Yeah, they were trying to appeal to the youngsters, to Gen Z, and and get a new generation of fans involved. Maybe this is it.
He's not kicking about with a tricycle anymore, is he?
Maybe it's putting a middle-aged man on a bike that's completely inappropriate for him.
Well, it's more appropriate. I was fuming when I found out he'd driven from Elland Road to this studio, which is 5 minutes walk away, to appear on the podcast once. And if I could ride a bike, I would join him. But it's probably better for the the environment in LS11 that he isn't driving the Kinnear Rover, whatever it is he's got, from 40 yards down the street.
Perhaps not as exciting as Angus Kinnear on a BMX is Kuhn Temenezkov, isn't it? He's gone out again, Real Union for the season again. They're quite lowly in the Spanish tiers, aren't they?
Another player we signed from Barcelona.
Yeah.
And what a success he has been. Managed about 15 minutes against QPR in the cup.
We've had him for 4 years, is that right? He's been on our books for 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to happen for him, is it? I think this is the last year of his contract. I found an article where a load of them signed new deals, including Pascal Strojk, actually. Him and some others signed new deals, but it's not happening. It feels like we've that whole generation of players who were all right for us in the under-23s at one point are pretty much all going to be leaving, aren't they? Like Gotts and McAlmont and Kuhn Temenezkov.
Yeah.
People like that.
Great bunch of lads.
They're at Edmondson. The people who we had high hopes for at one stage have all essentially just been replaced now and got older.
Well, soon we'll be able to farm all our under-23s out to Italy, to Salernitana, because A-Rad has put in a bid for them to own them, hasn't he? Because I believe the owners of Salernitana also own shares in another...
Lazio.
Serie
A club, Lazio.
Which you can't do.
No, because Salernitana have just got promoted to Serie A, and you can't have them both in Serie A, owned by the same person. So their way around it at the moment was to... I think they've put Lazio into a trust, or maybe Salernitana.
Salernitana have gone into a trust, yeah.
They had to do one or the other. So they put Salernitana into a trust, which means that kind of technically... owning it but not running it.
It's sort of arm's length, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And yes, it's an arm's length management organisation, which anybody familiar with council housing in Leeds will know exactly what is happening with Salernitana. But yeah, there's an actual bid from Radric Zani that is his mate from Fiorentina, who came on the board at the same time as the billionaire Pete Lowy. And I forget the other guy's name because nobody was interested in him because... some guy used to run Fiorentina.
Massimo, wasn't it? A Massimo? There was a Massimo on the board, which brought back some interesting memories.
And he's not a billionaire. He doesn't know any jokes, so we're not interested in him. But then he turned out to be the one with all the information about Salernitana. I've got his name right here. Sandro Mancucci. So he was the one confirming the bids. We made our offer defined in every detail on Wednesday, emphasising that it is valid for 10 days. So it's been a week ago today, so it's about 3 days still to run. And there's not been an answer yet. He does say, just think, the president, Andrea Rodrizzani, brought Leeds back to the top flight in just 3 years, finishing in ninth place. Rodrizzani would like to give, for example, a small share of fans in Salernitana to a small share of shares to the fans of Salernitana and to involve other entrepreneurs in the area. We will not be passing through. We have clear ideas. We have a Salerno project.
It could give the fans in Salernitana a small selection of fans, couldn't they, as well?
Yes.
There you go. It's quite warm in summer. There you go. That'll cool you down.
Yeah, the proposal is serious. He says, we don't want to do just 1 year and relegate them. Reassuring.
Got any more stickers?
I mean, we've got loads. I mean, if you're bored with hearing about Andrea Rodrizzani literally buying another football club.
Well, people are here for the sticker chat. They're not here for...
There are more on the side.
Shall I go over and get them?
Go on, let's have another pack each.
There we go. Right, one for the road.
I'll get him near.
Oh, that ASMR.
Oh.
There we go, right.
But it will help get us around the Brexit regulations, possibly, because you get a lot of points for work permits if you play in a top league, which Serie A is one.
I was reading about that, Moscow. It's deep, it's long, it's got lots of tables, it's boring.
Mrs. Rabiot's son. We've already had him, though.
You need 15 points, don't you? And if you basically play 1 minute in Salernitana's team, you get like 12 out of 15 points. So it's really easy to qualify.
So if they can still sign all the young Norwegians that we're after, then we can have Eirik Bakker's son is still a possibility.
Makes that a nonsense to the whole thing, doesn't it, really? The fact that you can so easily get around these rules. Pointless. It just means if you've got a bit of money, you can very easily do what you want.
Mm. Are you just discovering how the world works, Michael?
That's very true.
I've got Giroud and Kingsley Coman from France.
We've had Giroud before because it's a sandstorm joke.
Yes, but this is a half and half vertical one. So
well, exciting news for you, Moscow. We've got a spare now of Donny van der Beek, so you can put that one on your pencil case. So that's a nice one for you.
He sucks, though, doesn't he?
I've got Clément Lenglet, who I believe was the absolute horror show at the centre of France's defence the other night. Ozan Kabak, who was on loan at Liverpool, wasn't he, last year? And then I've got a half and half with Lewandowski and Zielinski. And then we've got the Finnish Irishman again on a half and half. We've got Daniel O'Shaughnessy.
I've got a good half and half here of Hans Hatteboer from the Netherlands. When I first looked at him, I thought that's Ruud van Nistelrooy, just at first glance. And then we've got Virgil van Dijk as well, who is broken.
Virgil van Dijk gets a sticker.
Yeah, ridiculous, isn't it? Who knows when they signed these off? I've no idea. Leroy Sané is in there from the German losing team. And we have a couple of Czechs, Alex Kral and Michael... Oh, cry, here we are again. Kramenicik. There you go.
I got a couple of JJs, the Finnish backup goalkeeper, Jesse Joranen, and a Czech called Jakub Jankto, and Gianluigi Donnarumma of the Euro 2020 winners, Italy.
Excellent. I think that just about wraps it up then, doesn't it? I mean, things should start to crank up into action in terms of Leeds United over the next week or so, because we officially start the new season tomorrow on the 1st of July. That's the start of the 2021-2022-2020 season, as Moscow would call it. So hopefully Jackie Harrison should be putting pen to paper in the next day or two, and we should see pre-season. I think pre-season starts on the 5th, doesn't it? But the
Harrison's pre-season started weeks ago.
But there is no pre-season for him. It's just one long season, isn't it?
Post-season into a pre-season.
Yeah. 5th, I think, is when they resume training. But Calvin may still be at the Euros at this point. I don't think he needs a rest, does he, at his age and his physical...
We said that about Matthias Glick.
That's true, yeah.
He looks like he's strolling through these England games, though, I have to say. I think a lot less is being asked of him in terms of mileage. I might be wrong in that. I'm sure someone can point me in the direction of some stats that suggest he's running a ridiculous distance.
It does seem like when you look at the statistics people pull out about how well he's playing when he's got so many more pressing actions than anybody else and he's winning the ball back so many more times than anybody else, it does seem like he's doing a lot more than anybody else without particularly working as hard as he does at Leeds United, which is just yet again underlines that Leeds United are the greatest team in the world.
Still only conceded 2 goals with him on the pitch. And one of those was a penalty in England. So
sounds good.
So that's good.
That is good. It is good. Thanks for that, Statman there.
And the UFC data, that I'm stealing it from him. But we cannot concede a goal with Calvin Phillips on the pitch.
No.
And never will again.
If you are supporting England at the weekend, enjoy. Try and enjoy. Anyway, do you know what it feels like? I was thinking about this in the car on the way over. Like, I kind of flip-flopped with my enjoyment and my engagement with England during this tournament. Kind of, you know, the opening game, the Croatia game, lifted the spirits. Then Scotland was a bit dour, wasn't it? And we sort of managed our way through the Czech game. But it feels like, because I really enjoyed England winning and beating Germany last night, and, you know, much in the same way it was for Southgate. I mean, like, that defeat to Germany in 1996, for anybody who's not old enough to remember it, it was completely crushing. It was soul-crushing, was that defeat. Because there was just that sense of momentum and that England were going to do it. He just felt destined in it with it being on these shores and all the rest of it.
Very different to now.
Yeah. But I don't know, maybe it's just exercising one of those ghosts a little bit from 25 years ago, that feeling of we'll never do it, you know, in that pessimistic way that you carry, Michael. It's like, this is just what it's destined to be like forever. And I think it's nice to, much in the same way as Leeds getting promoted, actually, it was nice to get that monkey off the back.
Still might be right, though.
No, it is, but I think as well, I've come to appreciate that'll still be a good moment. Well, what happened last night, even if England don't go on to win it, there'll be another soul-crushing moment further down the line. But
you can't underestimate just how bad England are in tournaments. Like, we don't win Euro knockout games. Like, it's just not... Did someone say it's our first win in the Euro since, like, 1960 or something ridiculous? In a knockout game, it was the most ridiculous start. You think, how can we have been that bad for that long? And we don't beat Germany either. It's the first time we've beaten them in a knockout since 1966, for God's sake. Like, we are pathetic in tournaments. So it's nice to finally beat someone half decent.
It is very much about the results where England is concerned. I'm a bit fearful of the game against Ukraine, not because of how the result might be, but it doesn't, like, the watching them play against Sweden last night and watching us play against Germany, it's not a match that is filling me with optimism that it's going to be a festival of footballing joy. It's kind of like, it is great that England won, but it's not a game you're never going to think to yourself, oh, I think I'll put that England-Germany game on and watch that back. Whereas I have watched back Leeds losing to Derby in the playoffs and put myself through that, and would probably watch back, you know, our draw with Manchester City at the start of last season. It's an incredible game. I'd watch that even though Leeds didn't win. And that's one where it's kind of, Yeah, England won, but I mean, it was still a bit.
It was quite functional,
it was a bit
wasn't it?
Dire, wasn't
yeah.
it? Yeah,
it is
and,
functional.
And
yeah.
what the Germany game had was it kind of had the its historical heft and its own kind of internal narrative strength, where you knew it only needed a little incident, a little spark, the goal that it got, for it to become like a really exciting moment. And Ukraine doesn't really offer that in the same way. So yeah, it's going to be a funny one.
And there is that very great danger that we know as Leeds fans, when tails are up and belief starts to, it's not even crept in, it's washed over England as a nation. And then you've actually got to go and do it again. And what Southgate said last night was correct. It counts for nothing beating Germany if you don't go and do it again against Ukraine.
0-0 with Ukraine, lose on penalties.
Jesus.
It's going to be, that's going to be the new history, isn't it?
Taking Michael's pessimistic outlook on life. But what I was going to say was that the thing with, I'm still like 90% Leeds. Like, I went to bed last night thinking about Bielsa. I woke up today thinking about Bielsa and the fact that it's nearly the start of the new season, and I'm so excited for that. Massively dominates my thoughts. What I think the England thing at the minute feels like, it's almost like a guilt-free affair. It's like, there's no baggage. I can just go and enjoy the good bits, but without feeling too distraught if it goes a bit wrong.
That's how these things always start, Dan.
On which note, right, let's wrap it up there, and we will catch up with you in a few days' time after the quarterfinal victory against Ukraine.
There will be a result.
There will. Cheers. We'll see you in a bit.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.